thoughts about Alaskans who are going to get what they need, and they deserve good health care coverage. And we all do.
A judge allows Medicaid expansion to go forward in Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, August 28th. Good evening, I'm Ann Hillman. Also tonight, new details on President Obama's visit to talk about global warming.
The president has a unique opportunity in going to Alaska to try to highlight why it is important that we act.
This story and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by Spinard Builder Supply. For more than 60 years, SBS has helped Alaskans build from ground to roof to everything in between. Spinard Builder Supply is here to build with you.
An Anchorage Superior Court judge ruled this afternoon that Medicaid expansion can go forward in Alaska as planned next week. Judge Frank Fifner denied the Legislative Council's request for a temporary restraining order to stop the program. The council is appealing the decision to the state Supreme Court. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
Judge Fifner spoke for more than 45 minutes in court, unpacking the complicated legal arguments each side presented to make its case. To win a restraining order to stop Medicaid expansion, the Legislative Council had to prove the legislature would face irreparable harm if the program went ahead on September 1st. In denying that argument, the judge made several points, including the fact that the state won't spend any money expanding Medicaid until after 2016.
For this fiscal year, with the acceptance of Medicaid expansion, nobody disputes that the federal government is picking up 100% of the tab. It doesn't cost the state one single dime, not one farthing.
A farthing is equal to a quarter of an old UK penny. In his preliminary decision, Judge Fifner also concluded the Legislative Council failed to prove it was likely to win on the merits of the case if it moves forward. The case centered on whether the Medicaid expansion population is mandatory or optional. If the expansion group is optional, that would require legislative approval. Health Commissioner Valerie Davidson smiled with relief when the judge wrapped up his decision. She says many Alaskans have waited a long time for Medicaid expansion, and she's glad they don't have to wait any longer.
You know, it isn't about us, it's about Alaska, and it's about Alaskans who are going to get what they need, and they deserve good health care coverage. And we all do.
A spokesperson with the Legislative Council said no lawmakers were available to respond to the ruling. The state will begin enrolling newly eligible Alaskans in the Medicaid program starting Tuesday. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Details are finally shaking out about the president's Alaska visit. The White House says the president will announce new policy initiatives while he's here. But as a senior advisor described it today, they aren't aimed at cutting off access to Alaska's natural resources, as some state leaders fear. At least, that's not the principal thrust. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports.
To a president calling for global action on climate change, Alaska is one big show-and-tell exhibit. White House senior advisor Brian Deese told reporters in a conference call that as Obama travels around the state, he'll draw worldwide attention to the impacts of climate change, which scientists say is transforming the Arctic more dramatically than anywhere else.
The president has a unique opportunity in going to Alaska to try to highlight why it is important that we act and that there is an urgency in acting. And so I think you can anticipate that he will be trying to speak quite plainly to those issues.
Deese also confirmed what's been rumored for weeks. Yes, when he's in the Seward area on Tuesday, the president plans to go to Exit Glacier in the Kenai Fjords National Park.
And the president will have an opportunity to spend some time in the park and experience both the beauty and the impact that the climate has had on that area.
Researchers say Exit Glacier has retreated more than a mile since the early 1800s. Deese says the president will talk to Seward business owners and fishermen and also plans to board a Coast Guard cutter to view the park from the water. Wednesday, Air Force One is off to Dillingham, followed by Kotzebue, where Obama will become the first sitting president to touch U.S. land above the Arctic Circle. Obama has been getting grief from environmental groups for permitting Shell to drill in Arctic waters. In Alaska, political leaders say Obama's not allowing enough development of natural resources, and he infuriated them by recommending wilderness status for much of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski, among others, has said she's worried Obama will try to use the Antiquities Act to put ANWR off limits to oil and gas development forever. And some fear a big announcement of that kind on this trip. They might be heartened by some statements the senior advisor made.
You know, it is the president's view that if we're using oil and natural gas, that we're better position to rely on American resources and to be able to put in place the highest and most stringent safety standards.
On the other hand, Brian Deese also spoke highly of Obama's use of the Antiquities Act, which allows a president to create national monuments without congressional approval.
This is a president who has used his authorities under the Antiquities Act to protect more public lands and waters than any other president in history.
Deese says the new policies Obama will unveil are about spreading strategies Alaska communities have deployed in the areas of alternative energy and responding to climate change.
Principally, the policy initiatives that we'll be talking about on this trip are ones that are about trying to identify ways that the federal government can work more effectively with the communities, with the tribal nations, with the state, to build on successes.
Obama is expected to arrive Monday at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson and speak during the closing session of a State Department conference in the Dena'ina Center. In Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Word is out already on one initiative President Obama is likely to announce while he's here, a plan to put the Denali Commission in charge of a project on village relocation that came out in Nome this week at a meeting of the U.S. Arctic Research Commission. KNOM's Emily Russell was there.
Renewable energy, climate change, and port development were all highlighted at the U.S. Arctic Research Commission's second day in Nome, but it was a special announcement about the president's upcoming visit to Alaska that got the room buzzing.
So next week, when the president is here, he's going to announce that the Denali Commission is going to be the lead agency to look at the environmentally threatened communities in Alaska.
Lorraine Cordova, project manager of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers' Alaska Deep Draft Arctic Port Study, broke the news Wednesday. The Denali Commission is an independent federal agency that has provided infrastructure and economic support throughout Alaska since 1998. The project will focus on 31 communities throughout the state, from Barrow on the North Slope down to Port Hyden on the Bering Sea and east to Eyak. Over a span of 3 years, the Denali Commission's efforts will help determine whether each community should, quote, protect in place or relocate due to the effects of climate change.
It's a difficult community question to answer. Do we move or do we stay? What parts do we move? What moves first? I mean, it's not as easy as one might suggest.
In a public teleconference organized by the Denali Commission this morning, Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott says the White House intends to put Senator Lisa Murkowski at the reins of the project. Denali Commissioner and President of the Alaska Federation of Natives, Julie Kitka, chimed in with her approval about the historic announcement.
I think that this is unprecedented to have a President of the United States mention the Denali Commission and be willing to engage and have his administration step up the effort to meet community needs.
President Obama is expected to unveil more details about the Denali Commission's role in the project during his visit to Kotzebue on Wednesday. Reporting from Nome, I'm Emily Russell.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the effort to clean up Town Square Park in downtown Anchorage.
Food trash, alcohol trash, cigarette butts, bodily fluids.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Alaska oil and gas have a huge impact on all of us, but how much do you really know about them? At akoilandgas.com, you can take an oil and gas IQ quiz and get the facts from reliable sources. This message sponsored by the Alaska Oil and Gas Association.
The wind-whipped wildfire that threatened Chiniac on Kodiak Island may not turn out to be the community-wide disaster it appeared it might become when officials ordered the evacuation of all residents last night. Kodiak Fire Chief Jim Mullican made an overflight of the community this morning and was surprised at what he saw.
Very surprising compared to some of the pictures that were out on the internet and stuff of that huge wall of flame that we could see clearly from Dead Man's. There's obviously burned areas out there, but it's not the devastation that you would think. It surprised me.
He said three homes and the Chiniac Library were burned to the ground, and other homes and structures were visibly damaged.
The loss of property, personal property, doesn't appear to be substantial. There are people who lost their homes, absolutely. And, my heart goes out to them. But the overall, we really lucked out because this was really setting up to be a very bad thing.
The Chiniac K-8 school on the same street as the library was not hurt. As of 2 p.m., the blaze had settled down enough that Chiniac residents were being allowed back into their homes, though the road is still closed to non-residents at the Roslyn Beach Bridge. There is no immediate cause identified as the start of the fire, estimated to have covered over 2,000 acres. But it may have been a power line or a transformer that was damaged by the winds. Kodiak Electric Association CEO Darren Scott said that reports of outages in the area began coming in just before the fire around 9 p.m. Kodiak City Manager Amy Kanishevsky, who serves as the Joint City-Borough Emergency Management Coordinator, said no injuries were reported and everyone from the town appears accounted for. An unlikely group of employees are on the front line of dealing with the impacts of homelessness in Anchorage. In Town Square Park, the Parks Department is picking up some of the responsibilities of working with people who have few other places to go. KSKA's Zachariah Hughes reports.
Roman Rubio's day starts at 4 a.m., shortly before driving in from the valley to a meeting among Anchorage's small battalion of gardeners. He and three other Parks Department workers load equipment into a truck, and by 6:30, they're in Town Square Park, tending to overflowing flower beds and orderly patches of grass.
I think of it as kind of like industrial gardening.
Rubio is an Army brat who moved back to Alaska and has been with the Parks Department in one role or another for almost a decade, working up to his official title as a Gardener 3.
I think of this park as kind of like a oasis in downtown. I mean, I've spent time here in the past, you know, when I used to live in town, like on my days off and just enjoying it as a space. And I'd like, I guess, to keep it clean enough for others to do the same.
One of the unexpected responsibilities for Gardener 3 is trash, lots of it. Rubio and his crew spend the first hour of their Friday morning fanning out with trash bags and garbage pincher stick things, erasing all evidence from the night before.
Food trash, alcohol trash, cigarette butts, bodily fluids.
Really?
Yeah. It's not every day that we get blessed with feces and vomit, but it's pretty frequently.
Every night, a good number of people stay in the park, and Rubio and his crew regularly rouse folks as they start cleaning and setting up sprinklers.
Morning.
Morning.
How's it going?
Good. How about y'all?
All right.
Sitting on one of the stone benches, a middle-aged guy named Willie says the park's employees tend to be a lot friendlier than the bike cops or private security staffers who all start circulating around this time each morning.
Yep, right about this time. I notice it every day you come around.
Willie's friendly, but kind of out of it. He asked me if I smoke weed, and I can't tell if it's an inquisition or an offer. Either way, this is one of the big concerns for the gardeners. They're not always sure what they're in for. One crew member told me she's been followed around the park, and Rubio says someone recently tried to fight him for his coffee mug. And there are a few things that have made this year exceptionally rough. One is more hard drugs.
We've found so many needles here this summer, and that's something that we've never found in the past.
But more than that, Rubio thinks that once people start partying or sleeping in the park, it signals permission, bringing along more people and more of the behaviors that are prompting a response from City Hall and the Assembly.
That is a lot of litter and trash.
Chris Schutte just started as the director for the city's Department of Community and Economic Affairs. He says there's no cost estimate yet for the man hours and maintenance connected to what he calls unsanctioned park activities, but it isn't cheap. And this is one of the fundamental paradoxes of the park. Maintaining a pleasant public space doesn't just bring office workers on lunch breaks, but also residents with few options for where to spend an evening or find a safe place to sleep. It's a question that the Sullivan administration started taking up with a nearby transit center. And now, the new mayor's administration is wading into the issue as well.
We're trying to take a more holistic approach to both because you can't fix one without impacting the other.
Before working for the mayor, Schutte headed the Downtown Partnership, a group that works on behalf of downtown businesses and property owners. In a transition report they prepared for the new administration, the partnership identified Town Square Park as one of its top concerns.
We've been hearing from a lot of our stakeholders that the park and the stigma of the park does have a direct impact on their success as a business or their ability to lease property adjacent to the park.
The park, though, is something of a landmine in Anchorage politics, with many still recalling the long, complicated battle it took to get made in the first place. But Schutte says changes are essential. On top of the nuisance and extra upkeep costs, during the last several years, public safety has eclipsed any discussion of the park's mission within Anchorage.
How do we make this a town square park? How do we make this the central gathering civic space of our community?
In the short term, the administration is looking at patches to current problems, like trimming trees or possibly setting up a charging station so people stop breaking open outlets to charge phones. Longer term, they're planning a community dialogue, convening a group of stakeholders that'll chart a course for how Town Square Park fits into contemporary Anchorage. For Rubio, the daily messes are more of a frustration than anything else. The gardeners pick where to put plants based on activity around the park. We're standing near a well-trod footpath, looking at a battered wad of purple kale.
It'll take a lot of abuse. It's probably not a good thing to advertise, but...
In total, the Parks Department oversees 76,000 flowers, more than 21,000 trees, and about 40,000 shrubs. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Residents of the Middle Yukon River from Caltag to Ruby have seen several groups of beluga whales over the past few weeks. Beluga sightings so far upriver are uncommon, but not unheard of. Fish and Game marine mammal biologist Lori Quakenbush in Fairbanks explains that going upriver is not a problem for belugas.
If there's fish going up and they can catch the fish either along the banks and fish are concentrated in certain areas, that's definitely a place that would be of interest and belugas might go there. You know, they're not obligated saltwater animals. That freshwater is fine for them.
Quakenbush does not have a firm explanation for the apparent increase in beluga sightings on the Yukon this year. With about a month left before ice starts forming on the interior river, she doesn't think that the belugas will have much trouble getting back to the ocean.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
These days, being into STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, doesn't make a girl a geek, it makes the world a better place. If you like numbers, nature, computers, and figuring out how the world really works, go to beanengineeralaska.com. You just might like what you learn. And it's not just for girls. This message on Alaska Public Media brought to you by ExxonMobil in Alaska.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Monica Goki. This week on AK, setting sail. What you're about to hear is an audio vignette about living the life you want after having a kid. The two characters are Devin and Melissa. They're dear friends of mine. And they have a 1.5-year-old daughter, Amelia. Also integral to their story is a sailboat. Neither one was a sailor before buying the boat, but it's like the boat is becoming this fourth member of their family.
We sent a recorder on board for a weekend trip sailing in Kachemak Bay. And so here's a peek into life aboard a sailboat with a toddler.
It's 10:05 and we're motoring out of the harbor. Amelia, say bye. Amelia waves bye to everyone on the dock. So we're still heading out to our destination, and Amelia's finally in bed, which is really lovely. She crashed and burned. It was like an epic ending of screaming and compulsive sign language, which means she's really freaking tired. Now it's just like us time, which is kind of magical because the sky is like this really nice light pink and purple at the horizon. And the ocean is wicked calm. There's like a slight ripple over it and big rollers. Nothing at all to worry about. We don't have any big waves or motion messing with the vibe right now.
So, cook him some breakfast. Do some bacon, eggs, burritos. Last night we had fresh fish tacos from some halibut we caught last weekend. And just took the big fluffy dog ashore. We got a new outboard for the little dinghy off Craigslist. $100. Guy said it didn't work. Turns out he didn't have the fuel on.
Score.
So, big score. Anyway, beautiful morning. Bopping around in Kachemak Bay.
Nap time, which means it's time to set sail. Devin just released the jib. When the sails go tight like that, that's exactly what you want. The wind died. I'm trying to find it now. We're still kind of moving, but the sails are luffing. Saw a ton of otters. Mila the mermaid's awake. So if sailing gets too much with her up, we just power down and motor. What are you doing?
Whoa.
Whoa. Are you feeding the fishies? Are you feeding the fishies? Thank you. Uh-oh. There's a lot down here to pick up. We are throwing tortilla chips into the water. Since Amelia was little, she has always loved to just throw things into other things. I think as most toddlers do. So Dad's running ashore to get some rocks to throw in the water because it's just like hours of entertainment when you're on the boat. But you can eat the chips and not the rocks, right?
No.
No. Daddy's bringing you rocks. Yeah, Daddy! Rocks? Rocks? Yeah, rocks. Hi, Dev. We are on our third bucket of rocks and Amelia is still playing. I am just hanging out in my bathing suit, catching some rays because it's glorious out. And Devin is still playing in his boat and it's like the perfect Saturday morning still. So many people think it's crazy that we have a baby on the boat with us, but it's like a really actually a great place for her to explore and learn and for us to kind of grow as a family together. Can you dance for me? No dancing? I mean, I can tell you, if we were back in Anchorage, we wouldn't be just hanging out and being so mellow. I'd feel like I need to be getting something done, you know, around the house or weeding the garden or doing laundry. But this is just so perfect. It's just so relaxing for us.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week, we're talking with Leah Zumwalt, a first grade teacher at Inlet View Elementary in Anchorage. She's originally from California, but has lived in Alaska for 8 years.
I get to work with 20 first graders this year, so that means I get to laugh every day and mold minds. I started off teaching first grade, and I think the reason that I've begged to stay in first grade is because they're just so raw and transparent, and they're so, if you come in and your hair's a little messed up, like, they're the types that are going to tell you exactly how it is, and I love honesty like that. A group of us did the Klondike one year, but we'd been driving and it was like 3 a.m. and there were purple and green northern lights and they're like dancing and we were so exhausted because we've been running all through the night. And it was just, we got out and we all started screaming and it was so beautiful and it was so clear. And I think that was one of my favorite moments because I don't think many other places get to see the northern lights like that. And I'd always wanted to see the northern lights. One of the first girls I met in Alaska was a backcountry skier, and I just had always wanted to get into that. And one day she took me out, and I just felt like, I guess that was really truly when I felt really Alaskan, was the first time I got to climb up a mountain and ski down. And months later, she took me to this little cabin that this guy had, and we woke up really early to him grinding coffee with an old-fashioned grinder, and then we went out and had breakfast, and he had like a little Peruvian flute that he played for all of us. And then we skied all day to come back to one of the wives of the skiers had made us all like tortilla soup. And it just seemed like, wow, this is the community I want to be a part of. It just seemed like Alaskans were so welcoming. And even if you're not their family, that it's kind of like you could be family with them just because how kind they are. So I think that's when I decided I wanted to be Alaskan.
Lia Zumwalt lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. If you want to tell your story, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Annie Feit and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Monica Gokey.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Emily Russell in Nome, Jay Barrett in Kodiak, Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, and Tim Bodoni in Galena. APRN's Liz Ruskin reported from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Gokey is our web editor. And I'm Ann Hillman. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation providing oilfield services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
And by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Many Alaskans who die in boating accidents don't die of hypothermia. Without a life jacket, drowning kills long before hypothermia does. More at pledgetolive.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
Broken hips and head injuries can have life-altering effects, especially for older adults. But no matter how old you are, it's important to be physically active to prevent injuries. Activity can also increase your strength, balance, and can be done at any age. Ask your healthcare provider about activities that will improve your health. Learn more about starting a new activity at injuryprevention.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.